The NCAA has just set their Final Four, but our Final Four has been set, and that's why you're here. Part one of the Final Four of the Greatest WrestleMania Match Bracket. Grab a drink, because it starts right now. Coming to you from the forgotten borough of Staten Island, New York, this is the Wrestling Guys Podcast. This is for the fans' perspective on all things in the world of WWE and the world of professional wrestling. We are your hosts. I'm Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, my tag team partner, Chris Never Miss, a.k.a. Chrissy Caribbean Cool. Part one of the Greatest WrestleMania Match Bracket. The Final Four is set. We're doing part one this week, part one next week. But you know what we got to do? We're not going to do anything until we get our usual clink. And here it is. It's a little improvised. I had a plastic cup and a glass cup. Forgot to get the clinking. Got to get the clink on going. But it's all good. Because I have a special drink for the occasion, hence why I have no glasses. I'm improvising. I haven't shown you yet. It's not on the video as we talk. But as usual, we're keeping it socially distant, so we can't have a drink together. So I have a drink, but I got the special Broken Skull IPA.
Oh, shit.
Stone Cold Steve
Where'd
Austin.
Where'd you find it?
I just happened to be in Jersey today, and the first liquor store I went to, I'm just perusing the thing, and I'm like, I wonder if he has it. And I just look, and it was right there. I was like, get the hell out of here. You have this? He's like, yeah, I always do. I was like, thank you, because now I'm always going to come here. Part one. So we figure these matches are kind of damn long.
Yeah.
And you had a good idea before we started. Let's do part one this week. We'll do part two next week right before Mania, because we're right here. I didn't realize we're so close. Last week was 3 weeks. It felt like so far away. And now it's like, bam, next, a week from Saturday, we're there.
Yep. Really a week from, I guess, really this coming Monday is when it really all starts. Because, I mean, it starts with the Final Raw, and then you got the Hall of Fame ceremonies, you got NXT Stand and Deliver for 2 nights, you got SmackDown, and then you got 2 nights of WrestleMania. So a long week of wrestling, but it should be exciting.
I'm really looking forward to it, man. They've already taped the Hall of Fame. I don't know if you saw, but the Bellas on their Instagram released photos. Jerry Lawler released photos, so they taped it this week, which is nice.
Oh, I didn't know that. So
yeah,
didn't they just announce yesterday, like, 2 new inductees, and they already taped it?
No, what I'm guessing is that it was last year's inductees that they taped already, because it was the Bellas and Jerry Lowe. That's all I saw. And they were announced last year. And X-Pac had a specialty Nike Air Max made where it says NWO on the side. On the back is the six ball from his T-shirt. And on the back it says Hall of Fame 2020. He's like, oh, I finally get to wear these, which is pretty incredible. If you haven't seen that, go to his Twitter page. Which is nice for him. So I'm guessing they did the 2020 announcements, because they just announced 2 days ago RVD is going in.
Yeah, and William Shatner.
Listen, though, William Shatner, in terms of celebrity wing, he had some moments on Raw. You know, he had a few things here and there. I mean, I think a lot more deserving. He should have been in long before Drew Carey ever got in. I'll tell you that much. So he's in the early days of Raw, he was there. I mean, making some appearances and stuff. So him and Jerry Lawler always had a nice little back and forth going. So, congrats to both of them. Congrats to RVD. He always just seems like he's winning in life. I don't know. Every time I see him, fresh off an Impact run, him and his wife and his girlfriend, or his two girlfriends. I'm guessing his wife. I don't know. Either way, bravo, sir. Congrats. I do got to say, before we start as usual, but so we're as of right now, this recording, we're a little under 2 weeks out from WrestleMania. This past Monday's Raw, it was just not good. I don't know what else to say. I was trying to think of like a funny way to say it, but no, it just wasn't good. The playful things between New Day and AJ Styles and Omos, I could get behind, because that's what the New Day does. I like that Omos is taking the more serious approach and he took him out after. But now it's just getting a little silly every week. People were mad about the Miz and John Morrison segment, but they loved the hey, hey, ho, ho, Miz and Morrison from last year's WrestleMania. Now they don't like this one, being that they're going against a music star. I don't understand. But my biggest beef is, why the hell did they break up the Hurt Business 2 weeks out from WrestleMania?
It's definitely surprising, and to me, doesn't make a lot of sense. I know I had texted you when it happened. I was like, why would they do this? It doesn't make any sense at all. I wish I could, dive into it and give my thoughts, but I can't figure this one out. I don't know why they would do it. It just makes no sense. Not to me.
Yeah,
I'm at a loss of words for it.
It doesn't make sense to me, given how hot the group was. how good the angle was, the four of them together, Alexander getting some shine, Benjamin getting some shine, Lashley becoming world champion because of it, and they just dropped the group. When you had originally texted me, I said, well, I'm hoping that it's a swerve and that they get McIntyre to come out and they take him out. It's like, oh, we were teasing the breakup. But no, him and Shelton Benjamin had a match. He took Benjamin out, and that's it. And nothing happened at the end of the night. But then, you know, who comes out for him? Baron Corbin, who's on SmackDown, comes in to take out McIntyre. It was just, it's very sloppy. The Hurt Business was one of their better groups and better storylines going into Mania. And to drop them 2 weeks out boggles my mind. I don't know who was like, yeah, let's get rid of them so we could put the focus solely on Lashley. I mean, they're already banned from ringside as it is. Like, you want to get pissed off at Alexander and Benjamin for what happened, yes. But breaking up the damn group, unbelievable.
Yeah, and I don't get the kind of sentiment of, you know, break up the group to put focus on Lashley, because you can have, now how many times have we seen it? You know, a faction where the leader is the focal point. I mean, the Four Horsemen, Ric Flair was the leader. I mean, that, you know, the other guys as great as Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard and, you know, whoever the fourth person was, because it changed a lot. Right. As great as they were, it didn't take anything away from who Ric Flair was in the group. The same thing can be said for the NWO with Hogan. Same thing can be said for DX, you know, first with Shawn Michaels, then with Triple H. The Nation of Domination, first with Farouk, then with The Rock. Like, so I don't know why they felt the need, if that's why they did it, to break up the group so everybody could just look at Lashley, because we already were, you know? Like, so I don't get that.
That, with that being said too, like, yeah, I don't get that either. It's just, to me, it was just a big question mark and a big why, like, why they do it. And then, so Rhea Ripley and Asuka have a contract signing, which, you know, Rhea kind of knocks over Asuka, shits ahead on the table. And then out comes Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler to essentially repeat what they just did with Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks.
Yeah.
So now they're going to face them in a women's tag title match next week, if I'm correct.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, so are they going to win the titles, or you're just going to take the two people in the main event team up again? You're repeating a SmackDown storyline now for Raw. It's like, is there one person just working on all these storylines going into Mania, and he's just confused and he doesn't know what he's doing, or he's like, maybe nobody watched SmackDown, so I'm going to use it here. Like, what the fuck is that?
I think if I had to take an educated guess as best as I could, with, you know, because obviously we're not part of the industry or their company or anything, but if you see how many writers that they actually have all together now, it's probably a case of people overlapping each other. You know, it's like too many cooks in the kitchen and too many people contributing to the point where it's becoming too jumbled. And I think it shows the advantage of what they used to have, where it was just, you know, at one point it was just Vince McMahon, Bruce Pritchard, you know, Vince Russo, and one other person that was writing TV. And that was it.
Right.
You know, if you listen to, there was some interview that Kevin Nash did. I can't remember which one or how long ago it was, but he talked about how, you know, they used to have the whole year mapped out. And now it's like they don't know how to map out a week. Yeah, it's something that they have to, I think, rein in and get better doing, because it's literally just like every week you're watching the same show. And not just because of the title, like literally just the same show.
Yeah, and it's just like, I just saw this and now you're doing it again. And it's just like, and that's the only thing that makes me mad. It's like, you know, if you came up with something original or did it before, it's like, it doesn't get to me, and I agree, right? Back in the day, you used to have him and Pat Patterson sit at his pool and book the whole territory.
Yeah.
A pad and a pencil, and if people went down with injury or left, they just erased that name and plug in somebody else all the way through Mania. And now it's like they can't tell you what's going to happen 10 minutes from now.
Yeah.
Because no one has a clue of what's going on. And you know, maybe it's because it's as big of an entity as it has become. Storylines are lacking going into Mania. Last year, I just felt like they shined so much because they had to think on the fly because of the pandemic shutting everything down. And you already had your matches set, but it's like, how are we going to do this? And I loved Mania last year, and I thought we got really good quality matches. We had an all-time classic in the Boneyard match, and that was something that was thought of a couple of days before they filmed it, you know, and now it's like, the fuck are they doing? You know, now you're hearing the reason why they pulled Charlotte originally from the match, but according to Andrade, was they thought that Charlotte was pregnant. And then when they found out she wasn't pregnant, then she got COVID. And then she was out with COVID, her and Andrade, for a significant amount of time. Now it looks like Charlotte might be well enough. So maybe they're plugging in Charlotte into that match. And maybe it'll be a triple threat. You know, who the hell knows? But, you know, it's very weird, very disconnected. A lot of miscommunication, it just seems like. They need to get their shit together. You know, maybe because it's Mania season and the move to Peacock, and maybe there's a lot of moving parts that are kind of just taking away from the actual show itself. But I hope this isn't something that we keep on seeing, because it's getting out of hand for me personally. And you know, whoever the writers are there, and I mean this with the utmost respect, start getting fucking creative. You're on the creative team. Enough ranting on that. Let's go. So we've been deciding which ones we want to go to. We are going to start with the two winners from the left side of our bracket. That's the Golden Era, New Generation, WrestleMania's 1 through 12. Attitude Era, WrestleMania's 13 through 18. That's going to be HBK Razor, ladder match from WrestleMania 10 against Bret Hart, Stone Cold Steve Austin, WrestleMania 13 submission match. We're going to start off with the ladder match from WrestleMania 10. If you guys have followed us all the way through, awesome, as usual. If you didn't, you can find this where you get all your podcasts. Go and download the previous three episodes. Listen to those first. We'll still be here. Just pause us. And we'll be right back. All right. So let's start it. All right. So WrestleMania 10, the 10th WrestleMania, took place in Madison Square Garden, March 20th, 1994, in the world's most famous arena, where it all began 10 years later. I always thought they were going to do it every 10 years, but they didn't. They did 1, 10, and 20, and then went back in 29. Those bastards. But I guess by then they were into the stadium thing. So
moving on. Yeah, I mean, I think about it pretty often, you know, especially when I'm talking to people about WrestleMania and shows that I've gone to, that we, you and I and our friend Josh, went to the very last WrestleMania in Madison Square Garden.
And I remember leaving the event, and remember we were talking to those two guys on the outside, and we're like, oh, you coming back for 30? And they were like, fuck yeah, man. And
I remember those guys. Yeah. Fuck it, we're going.
Yeah, exactly. we just always assumed that every 10 years they would just return to the Garden.
That didn't work out that way. Now you got to go to Jersey and go to MetLife.
Yeah. And, you know, I enjoy MetLife, but it's not the greatest of the new stadiums. So we're here, right? So we're here, WrestleMania 10. I never always got the – they always used to change the entranceway when they went to the Garden for a while, where it was just coming out of that side. Like, it was the hard camera side, but you could see, like, it was like its own little entrance. They would do it for the Royal Rumble. They would do it, like, at several pay-per-views that were at Mania. They always came out through that particular entrance until they changed it up a few years later. But the match we're talking about now is for the Intercontinental title. Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon. So HBK was the champion. He had beaten British Bulldog for it. He was the champion for a while, up until, I think, the fall of 1993. In fall of 1993, the president, and I say that in quotations, Jack Tunney, he said that he was stripping Michaels of the title because he wasn't defending the title. So back in the day, they used to have a champion must defend it every 30 days rule, which they don't put into effect anymore.
They don't do that.
Right. So because of that, he was suspended. He was stripping of the title. In reality, there was rumors that Michaels had gotten suspended for a drug test or for steroids. There was also reports that Michaels didn't want to drop the belt to anybody, so they decided to vacate the title instead and suspend him as like a disciplinary type thing. And in the midst, and in his absence, Razor Ramon rises up, and they do a Battle Royal on Monday Night Raw, where the last two people in the Battle Royal would face off the following week for the Intercontinental title. Surprisingly enough, it's Razor Ramon and Rick D'Amato Martel, which is actually a really good match. We've never seen it. It's actually a good match. Razor Ramon against Rick Martel. So Razor would come out on top. He would be your new Intercontinental title champion. And then Michaels would return. But Michaels would return with the Intercontinental title. And he would say he never lost the belt. He wasn't going to acknowledge that Ramon was the champion. So they have two belts. He insisted he was the true IC champion. Ramon says that he was the true IC champion. He would, like, interfere in his matches. He would help IRS steal, like, his gold chains. I don't remember that. And that led to the match at IRS for the Intercontinental title at Royal Rumble.
Yep.
And then Michaels would have his insurance policy Diesel with him coming in, and they announced a ladder match. Both belts hanging from the rafters, and you would have to climb a ladder to get this to get these belts. They claim it is the first ladder match, however, we all know now it is not. Yeah.
Bret Hart might have something to say about that.
Right, Bret Hart is the one who actually brought it over from Canada, and mm-hmm. he actually had a ladder match. I actually have it in a WWE magazine somewhere, which is why it always used to bother me when they say it was the first ladder match. And the first ladder match, technically, was Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, not Shawn Michaels and Razor.
Yeah, and you can actually find it on, well, as of right now, what the current version of the network is, you can find that match on there. That's, you know, that's going to change when it goes to Peacock. It's going to take them a while to, you know, port everything over. But, I mean, if you were to jump on the network before April 4th, you can find that ladder match.
Right, so go ahead and check that out first. It's actually a good match as well. But this is the match, right? WrestleMania 10, the ladder match amongst what they say is the benchmark for ladder matches and one of the greatest show-stealing matches in WrestleMania history, probably in history. We're going to set it up. We have our WrestleMania 10 queued up on the network. You're going to go down to the match markers, my lovely, lovely match markers that are not going to be ported to Peacock until much later in the summer, hopefully. You're going to hit WrestleMania 10, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon ladder match. That is at 1 hour, 53 minutes, 45 seconds. And we're going to count down, Chris, from 3, 2, 1. We're going to play.
Hang on, let me mute my TV. All right, I had to mute my TV, sorry.
All right. There are no rules. Whoa.
My favorite version of the IC title right there.
To me, there is no other version but that. This is the that's the perfect version. I love the white IC title. Actually, I own a replica myself.
I like the white strap, yeah. So... you were talking about before with, you know, Shawn didn't want to drop the belt. And, of course, that's all rumor. And, you know, there's plenty of interviews. And even Bruce Pritchard has talked about it on his podcast a couple of times about. And I think Conrad Thompson, the host, co-host, actually asked him straight up one day. He's like, how come Shawn Michaels has never dropped any belt? Because if you think about it, the only time that he ever really dropped the title cleanly was to Steve Austin at WrestleMania 14. And to Sid. Well, he did it to Sid, too.
Right.
But, you know, in this era, you know, they had the tag titles, him and Diesel. They vacated it. He had the tag titles with Austin. He vacated it. He had the Intercontinental title, vacated it. The first time he was WWE champion, you know, he lost it to Sid, won it back, then vacated it.
Because he didn't want to face Bret at WrestleMania.
Right. So a lot of vacating championships in you know, Shawn Michaels' history.
So the crowd here is pretty wild for the match here. I did love the element. So here's the thing. Now, most ladder matches we're used to seeing have multiple ladders set up down the aisle, underneath the ring, on the side of the ring. This match had one ladder, I think is remarkable. And that ladder is going to get beat to shit by the end of the match. I'm surprised they're able to stand on it. And I wonder if, you know, like, is this a gimmick ladder? Do they pick this up at Lowe's beforehand or Home and Depot? And was like, yeah, dude, use this ladder. We're fine. Or did they just happen to have one in Madison Square Garden? Which was like, we need this for the match.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real ladder for sure. I would probably guess that they either borrowed one from the facility or had some intern run to the store and buy a ladder.
Always a big fan of Razor. I love. I'm a big fan of Scott Hall. Honestly, always thought he was great. I love Razor going underneath the ladder here. Yeah. Great story. But think about the story to start off, right? Michaels waves no, goes around the ladder. Ramon right underneath the ladder, you know. And on commentary here is actually Jerry Lawler and Vince McMahon, which is great. And as we start the match, I'm actually going to hit mute here so we can kind of just talk along with the match here, so I don't want to, you know, have it blaring over us here.
Would you go under or around the ladder?
I go under the ladder.
Yeah, I'm not really not 100% superstitious. Like, being under a ladder doesn't bother me, so I would go under it.
I would go under it. I think the heel if you were the heel to go underneath it, like, fuck Luck, I could see like an MJF doing it. Like, you know, one of those, like, you know, who had a better mullet than Shawn Michaels at this point in 1994? I don't know, but Diesel's might be a close second because his mullet's pretty epic too.
There's definitely a lot of mullets going on here. And yeah. Shawn's was great. Look how long it is.
To your point about not wanting to drop the title and the rumor, right? I mean, it's funny that when he does decide to lose, right, it is to a Click member in Razor, yeah. Right? I mean, you got three members that are clicking that ring right now, Diesel, Razor, and Shawn Michaels. So it's like, if I'm going to lose it, I'm going to lose it from, you know,
to a friend, friend.
And I think the aspect I didn't think about it until just now, and I know we've gone through this whole bracket and it's made the final four, but the fact that it's only one ladder that is used in this match is incredible.
Yeah.
One ladder, it's in the aisle, and because when we watch our TLC matches, we're so used to them lining the ramp with ladders all around the ring, all under the ring, and this was just one ladder. To me, right there, that's. See, in order to move on here, dude, I'm going to break down. We got to break down this match by the smallest minutia, I think, here. We got to get really, really granular here, really small. To me, that's a plus right there. That's a definite plus to start this match.
It is, you know, and you know, obviously the ladder match has evolved, you know, and we've seen a lot of crazy things. But this just goes to show, not only because it's the first ladder match, well, quote-unquote first ladder match, but they only used one, and it still holds up all of these years later.
Right.
I love the black and gold ropes there, too.
Yeah, I love that they would do that for Mania. They did that in WrestleMania 9, too. I think they did, like, a black and gold theme.
Yeah.
I always like, because you know what it is? It makes the event feel special. You know, like, this isn't your typical Raw, SmackDown, house show with our red, white, and blues.
Walked into the camera there.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
He just bumped into the camera. This is bringing back so many memories. Like, I really miss this era of wrestling.
Oh, that was nice. What a bump from the outside right into the ring. And look how close table. The commentary tables, huh? And how small those tables are.
Small.
Because back then they weren't being utilized every match to, you know, for spots.
Nothing like Diesel would close mine.
I love the fringe on the vest and on the pants. That's great. And then he stands over him, just stands over Razor, and looks at him and goes, me and you are going to be tag champs one day. And then the ref immediately kicks him out. So Diesel got all dressed up for WrestleMania 10 for no reason. But what I do like about it is you get rid of the bodyguard, so now it's legit one-on-one. Somebody has to win. And you know there's not – maybe you're not going to be an outside interference in this case.
And this was right around when Nash got there. As Diesel.
Yeah. So he asked for his release from WCW saying he had a family. He was going to go try bouncing again. And as soon as he got his release, he faxed over WWE and signed his contract. I mean, but what was he doing? It was the best decision he ever made, right? I mean, what was he doing there? Vinny Vegas, Oz, he comes over here. Diesel, bodyguard to Shawn Michaels. He'll be Intercontinental Champion by the end of the summer. And by that November, he'll be the world champion.
Yep. And now he's a Hall of Famer.
Right, exactly. Twice over.
Yep.
That's unbelievable. Talk about a twist of fate there. No, to turn a phrase from the Hardy Boys. Who takes a turnbuckle like Shawn Michaels like that? All the way up and down like that. Comes back over. No wonder he has so many back problems later on, though. Oof, look at that. Clothesline over the ropes. Shawn Michaels is just, man... He makes everything look like he just got hit with a ton of bricks.
I love that classic logo, too. You see the logo in the corner.
Yeah. Classic WWF logo. The classic WrestleMania logo on the apron. And look how close the fans are, too, in proximity. It's just a regular... It's a gold guardrail this time around.
Yeah.
But, like, think about... Like, I've only sat ringside once in my life. And when I sat, I went to NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2. And it's so different with that... black you know, that black siding that they use now that's padded with the, you know, from our side and our perspective, like back then, like I was able to like rest my drink on there, like as I'm watching the event. Now it's back then it was just a guardrail, you know. Oh, right on the concrete.
Yeah, that's Mick Foley style right there, right on the concrete.
Oof, a lot of cables there too. I think the cables probably hurt more than the concrete, sticking in your fucking back and shit. I mean, Razor really selling it there, looking at his elbow, which means, I mean, his elbow could be legit hurt there, to be honest with you.
It probably is. Now Sean going for the ladder now.
There it is. You know what it is, too? The ladder being a bright orange, intentional or not, it brings focus to the ladder, it being such a bright color.
Yep.
You know, as opposed to now, later years, it is just completely black. Maybe it's intentional, maybe it's not. If it is intentional, bravo, whoever thought about it. I want to say maybe not, but it makes you notice it, especially when there's one, right?
Yeah. And it doesn't look that big, but, I mean, you're talking about two big guys. Scott Hall's, what, 6'7"?
Yeah, exactly. Nice hair, right here. Look at that. And you know what I love about that? So if this was today, and I'm talking both companies, they're waiting for the spot. They put the ladder down, and they're watching Shawn Michaels with the baseball slide. He puts the ladder down. He goes up for the ropes to try to get up and bring himself up, and he's looking away. Right. Yeah. So when he goes to bring himself, he's not even noticing that Shawn Michaels is going to try to baseball slide the ladder into his midsection. So it's not him just waiting there to be like, okay, do the spot, you know?
Yeah.
That's wrestling 101 right there, man. That's some of you guys take notes. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, a lost art is, I don't even have the words for that. Seriously. Look at that. Oof. That in the mix session.
Yep. The ladder's now in the ring and they're using it on each other. Those ladders are pretty heavy, too.
Absolutely. I remember working in, like, Toys R Us and, like, joking around and being like, yeah, I could do Shawn Michaels and Razor, and then lifted the ladder. I'm like, man, if this was legit, these fucking ladders are heavy as fuck. and think about it. Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, my God. And think about in later years when Big Show would do, like, that special, like, novelty, like, giant ladder that he used to climb up.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Oh, and then he just threw it at him, right? Unbelievable. So think about this. The event at MSG had 18,065 people. $960,000 gate. The buy rate was 1.68, but it was down from WrestleMania 9. WrestleMania 9 had a 2.0.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were coming off one of their worst years in 93. 94 would be better, and then 95, we all know what 95 is, but now for the first time, Shawn is going after the belt, but Razor gets to him.
Yeah.
So this match... it's 24 minutes and a few seconds long. I think it's like 24:09. Oh, full moon.
Oh, that's right. We just saw Shawn Michaels' ass. Shawn
Michaels' ass is completely out.
Complete tan line, too. Like, you can tell the spray tan is real there. Layton just went nuts at that, by the way.
Yeah.
Will Peacock edit that out? That's a good question.
Come on. Let's hope not. But this match, they actually went over their time, like, significantly. To the point where they had to cut out the 10-man tag team match, and apparently Randy Savage scolded them both for it, for doing it.
Right.
So I don't know if that's, I mean, it's definitely a dick move, but I think when you see like what they did here, do you think maybe they're kind of forgiven because they put on a show? Here comes probably my favorite spot here in the match, the dive off the ladder.
Yeah, the splash off the top of the ladder, which in comparison to what they do now off ladders, but it's innovative, right? I mean, you know, this is one of the first. I always go back to, and I want to say it's Bubba Ray Dudley, who they went a little long on their tag match. And when they got to the back, Vince confronts him and goes, if you ever go long on my show again, you better make sure it's a match like that. And it says like, you know, he doesn't mind as long as it's good shit.
Right.
You know, I think at the time, I don't think they got any heat. Well, I mean, the click was always getting heat, but I think at the time it was, no, you shouldn't have done it, but you fucking just tore the house down. So, okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, Sean just Razor pushed the ladder over and Sean went right into the top rope. Something to wrestle with Bruce Prichard, they cover this WrestleMania and they talk about it. And apparently there was, you know, a lot of heat on them, but nothing that, you know, they wouldn't be held accountable. They wouldn't be punished, but a lot of people were pissed off at them for going over the time.
Well, because you figure that those guys are banking on them, you know, and you hear a lot of these things back in the day is like our biggest check of the year was our WrestleMania payday. So right, if you're not on the show, you're not getting paid. Right.
Right.
So if those guys didn't make it, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure those guys still got paid regardless.
Yeah, they probably did. I think they did. Yeah.
But at the same time, too, it's also your time to shine. It's fucking WrestleMania. It's the biggest event of the year. You want to be on there and now you're not there. You know, I can see that as well. But you know what, though? Would you rather this match go long or this fucking throwaway 10-man tag?
Overhead cam right here. Both guys
outlined
the chalk. This match is just so... It's so simple, but it still just works. Like, watching it today, 2021, after all the ladder matches, the different variations of ladder matches, the different spots that we've seen, for them to do... I don't want to call... I know I just used the word simple. Maybe that's the wrong word. But when you compare it to everything else, you know, they're not doing 450 splashes off the top of the ladder. They're not stacking ladders on top of each other. They're just doing just simple spots, and it still holds up to this day, in my opinion.
But if you think about it, right, everybody wants the HBK Razor ladder match. So right. What do they got to do? They got to go bigger, you know?
Right. Oh.
But I think I will say there's another match. There's a ladder match between Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho in the Royal Rumble. And they kept it. They didn't do crazy over-the-top spots. At one point, Jericho gets him in the Walls of Jericho on the ladder. It's a really, really fucking good match. And they didn't go over the top in terms of spots. They kind of kept it classic, you know, in the vein of HBK Razor. And HBK and Razor would repeat this match in 1995 and the SummerSlam. And that one is very, very good as well. It's also a very good match. It doesn't stack up to 10, but it's still a really good match if you guys want to actually watch the sequel, so to speak, at that point. And then at that point, Shawn Michaels is the Intercontinental Champion. Razor's the challenger. Would have loved to have seen a trilogy with these guys. Would have been great.
Look at that slingshot into the ladder.
And look at Sean. Look at Sean right there, though. What a move. What a move, right? Slingshot into the ladder. He holds on, and you see him rock the ladder back, so the ladder falls back on top of him. Right, it just adds that much more intensity, emotion to the match, because it's like, holy shit, he threw him in there so fast that he hit it and fell back, and the ladder came back with him. But in reality, that was all Shawn Michaels who did that shit. Yep. You know? Unbelievable stuff here, man. I feel like I'm... We're having markout moments with this match. This is the first time I've seen this match in a very long time, though. Look at that. Good sell right there. He gets hit in the face. Michael's over the top rope effortlessly, too. Like, he just kind of just jumps over the top. Wow. Unbelievable. I do love those IC titles. Look at this shining up there.
Yeah. I think one of them is like a different – like the gold looks a little different.
Yeah, one is a bit darker than the other. Yeah. I know exactly what you're saying, because I remember even being a kid watching this.
Yeah, you can tell the difference.
I also remember this being on at like 4 p.m. on pay-per-view instead of the usual 8. It was on at 4, and then it replayed at 8. I remember watching it at 8 with my family, thinking it was live, and it turns out it was the replay.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, it originally aired at 4 o'clock. I was like, what the fuck, pay-per-view is at 4 o'clock? What the hell? But, you know, switch it up.
That ladder fell right on top of Sean.
Unintentionally, but it adds the drama. I love these overhead shots too, because it shows you like just almost like how high it is in relation to.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember when they did that with that famous tag ladder match between the Hardys and Edge and Christian at No Mercy in 99. And they kept using that overhead shot, and they were acting like it had been something that was never done before. But actually, they did it here, using that same shot. Yeah. Now both men going at it on top.
Yeah, but do they ever? Do they ever? Look at this.
And the Latigan's out.
Oof. Oh, my God. So, again, he does like a modified, not really suplex,
like
almost
a hip toss
power
almost.
Slam,
yeah.
Hip toss, yeah. And then in the with the weight being shifted from Sean going off the ladder and Razor shifting his weight, the ladder literally just twisted underneath him and fell. And I think that
yep,
adds
that's
more
gotta be scary
to the fact
that
it has to be scary as fuck, right? I mean, you're like, yeah. Holy shit, I'm supposed to stay on there, and now I'm not. And again, this goes back to the one ladder being used, because if that ladder was still fucking up like that, somebody else would just go outside and get a new one, you know? Look at that. Shawn Michaels dropkick to the ladder. It doesn't really do anything this time around, but Razor actually falls over. You know? It's like Michaels kind of missed it. He still kind of got it enough for it to tilt it slightly, and Razor kind of just took it the rest of the way himself. Ladder's still up there, which is cool. But one thing I do in the commentary, if you guys are watching this and either listening to the commentary at the same time or whatnot, all Vince McMahon keeps saying is, that ladder is all twisted and bent. That's all he keeps saying over and over again.
I like how Sean just pushes the ladder over right on top of Razor.
Subtle push over on Razor. Oh, nice.
There it is.
Sweet chin
music.
Would it be his finisher at the time? At the time, he was using the teardrop suplex.
I think here, though, he switched to sweet chin.
Was it?
Yeah,
I feel like Sweet Chin Music wasn't his finisher until he was a face. Because he had it was the teardrop suplex for a while, then it was the pile driver for a while, and then when he went face, it became Sweet Chin Music. I remember distinctly it being Sweet Chin Music because he was he named the move because he was gonna face Jeff Jarrett for the IC title in your house. And he called, he was like, I'm gonna hit you with a little chin music, and then that was it ever since. I don't know. Wrestling Guys PC, man. Correct me, please.
Speaking of pile driver.
There it is. It's a move right there. Let's unmute, because I think that is the finisher at the time.
And that's a move we don't see a lot.
I love it.
At least not in WWE.
Oh, but so at the time, his move is the pile driver at this time.
Okay.
I believe so. I will say this.
I don't remember that.
I love a good pile driver. And I with head injuries, I don't ever want to see them again, except for Taker, because he knows how to do them really well. But I love the pile driver.
The pile driver is a scary move to take. You know, the Steiner screwdriver is one that I don't think I would take. If you want to do it on me, I'd be like, no, I'm not taking that. Look at this spot right here. Sean just going to use the ladder and just fall on top of Razor.
Losing his body weight, jumping. There is a Twitter account that it follows. It's actually become very famous. It started out with just videos of Steve Mongo McMichael and all his fuck-ups, but it's called Mongo and Friends. And the other day, I'm actually scrolling through it, and they show a move where Sting actually gets Big Bubba Rogers, Ray Trailer, Big Boss Man, in a pile driver, and trying to support his weight, he doesn't fall back on his ass. He actually falls forward, and Ray Trailer actually falls on his head. And that's the danger of doing something like that, you know? And he has him up for a good couple of seconds and then ends up just falling forward instead of on his butt. But it's like, oh, man, like, what the hell?
Look at him break his neck.
Exactly. Absolutely right. And that shows you the danger of that. I mean, and you'll know that WWE would famously outlaw pile drivers for a while. That's why Undertaker actually switched to the Last Ride as opposed to the Tombstone pile driver, and then he would bring it back a few years later. But he would be the only one that would be using it.
Yep.
Look at that one right here. Across the ropes. Razor. Shoulder tackle into the ladder. Oh, and he crotches the top rope.
And now, this is it. This is the end here. Yeah. Sean's foot is caught in the rope.
Let's get it. Let's go.
Now I'm looking. Where is Carlos?
Carlos is there. Carlos, super fan, along with Vladimir. I actually used to work with Carlos in Toys R Us. Great guy. Super wrestling fan, man.
I'm trying to spot him. I haven't been able to see him yet. I'm sure he's there, though.
Near the entrance ramp. So Razor, the ladder is so messed up that he has to readjust the ladder to get up.
Now look at Sean, because Sean is, and Razor's got the belts, Razor wins. But if you notice, like, Sean knew that he was caught up for too long, right? So he's like, all right, I got to switch this up. So as he gets his leg free, his arm gets caught in the rope.
Right.
And that's just good stuff.
As he frees his leg, his arm gets caught. So he knows, like, because the ladder at that point was, well, it literally, I know it was making fun of Vince, but the ladder is really beat up at this time.
Yeah,
so when Vince goes to get up, the ladder actually bends a little bit. He has to readjust it and then climb back up. And he pulls his leg out and at the same time gets his arm caught in the ropes. That's awesome. And then Razor, also probably scared to maybe it'll fall underneath him, just grabs the belt and falls down with it, which is another great moment too, because it's like a sense of urgency, right? Because even though Michaels is caught on the ropes, he could still probably reach him or do something with it, you know? Great match. Wow, unbelievable. And Razor climbs up. Look at the ladder still like shifting. Look, Errol Hebner is actually holding it up for him. Because the ladder is shifting. Errol Hebner puts his feet on it to steady the ladder. So Razor could pose with both belts at the top. Good, man. This is a classic, man. Everything about this match, I'll tell you right now, 5-star rating from Meltzer. Match of the year by the Wrestling Observer Newsletter for 1994. It was one of the few matches in North America to receive a 5-star from them. And everybody pretty much praises this for being groundbreaking. So here's the funny thing. The 10-man tag, Jeff Jarrett, Head Shrinkers, IRS, and the other guy fading to the background here, is actually them arguing like to set the match up. And they never go through with the match. So they have a backstage segment, but no match. That's unbelievable.
Right, and the excuse used as to why it doesn't air is they said, oh, the match had to be canceled because no one can figure out who would be the captain.
Right. So they did that on purpose in order to set up the match being canceled. You know what, though? As stupid as that is, though, it works. they would never do that in this day and age. You know? Like, I don't know. I just feel like it works. All right, so WrestleMania 10. We're here. We just went there. We came, we saw, we watched. Dude, I forgot how good that match was. I really did. Not to blow smoke up the match's ASS there. But
it's a great match.
It's the little things like we were just pointing out there. The Shawn Michaels with the leg on the ropes and followed by the arm, the not waiting for the baseball slide spot, still trying to get up on the ropes, looking away. One ladder used throughout the whole match. That still gets me, man. Unbelievable stuff, man. I think that's incredible. I think that's one of the highlights, you know, that especially now we see nowadays, and that's deservedly so of the 5 stars. Great stuff, man. All right. Lucky number 13, as Chris said, WrestleMania 13, the next one in the final four, coming out of the Attitude Era bracket, Steve Austin, Stone Cold himself, against Bret the Hitman Hart, WrestleMania 13, the submission match. Now, this goes back to when Steve Austin won the King of the Ring event. So he wins the King of the Ring, okay, and then he begins to start calling out Bret Hart. Bret Hart at the time, he had left after WrestleMania 12, after the Iron Man match. And he used to say stuff like, you know, if you put S in front of Hitman, you would have my idea of Bret Hart. My thoughts of Bret Hart, whatever he said, right? And he started doing that stuff. Hart announced that he was coming back in Survivor Series, and he accepted Austin's challenge. They had a match at Survivor Series, a very good match. Survivor Series 1996. Yeah. Also at MSG. And Austin would beat Hart. Hart would beat Austin when Austin went for the $1 million dream and he kicked off the ropes a la from WrestleMania 8 when he beat Roddy Piper and pins him that way. Same exact way. Shayna Baszler would be beaten like that multiple times in her career. And then Austin would win the 97 Royal Rumble. He would be eliminated by Hart but sneak back in because the referees were busy with Taker and Vader, I believe, fighting it out on the outside, and come back and eliminate Hart to actually win. It would be the first of three. His elimination was considered unofficial because the referees did not see it.
Yeah, so they couldn't call it. Yeah.
Oh, it was actually okay. Excuse me, it wasn't Vader and Mankind. It was Mankind and Terry Funk that were fighting on the outside. If I'm wrong here.
Yeah. However, Taker and Vader were inside. Yeah.
Right. So, however, because he won the Rumble, he also didn't get the title shot at WrestleMania, which was weird. They decided to do that Final Four at In Your House because Shawn Michaels lost his smile and gave up the belt. As we said, doesn't like to give up those belts. He wouldn't win that match, but Hart would actually win it, but then he would lose the next night to Sid, and that would set up Sid versus Undertaker at WrestleMania. And then, you know, Austin would interfere in that match, costing him the title, and then Hart would challenge him to a submission match. at WrestleMania 13, which people are like, what the hell are you talking about? Bret Hart, known for submissions, right? With the sharpshooter. Austin at the time, like, what the hell am I going to do? I don't do submissions. Yeah, I do that Million Dollar Dream, but he's not really known as a submission mat wrestling guy. So what are we going to do? Little did we know that this match would steal the show. Yep. So previous to what I just said, right? The ladder match of WrestleMania 10, 5 stars. It was voted best match of the year by the Observer newsletter. Guess what happens in WrestleMania 13? 5 stars as well. Also voted match of the year for 1997. And the same thing. Pro Wrestling Illustrated readers also named the match of the year in 1997. IGN would actually name it the number one in the list of top 20 matches in WrestleMania history, dubbing it the launching of the Attitude Era. Complex Sports would rank it number one in the 50 greatest WrestleMania matches in history, citing that the matches, factors of storyline, innovation, psychology, finish, post-match, angle, and fallout were the best. And other people would say that it was outstanding. It helped launch Austin 360 into the stratosphere and become the star that he would because of the double turn at the end of the match. So this, just to show you, let's give you a little bit of context to show you the significance of this match and how big this match is. So coming into it, Austin, for all intents and purposes, is the heel. Bret Hart is the face. All right. Coming out of the match, we would have a different story.
Yep.
Also, we have Ken Shamrock as our special guest referee. Because of the submission, him coming off of, you know, being a huge star in the UFC and in Pancrase. This is pretty incredible. And this is a good setup. A good story, a good feud going into Mania, building up off of several months. And we were going to start it at the actual match, but didn't realize, it totally slipped my mind, that there's actually a video package beforehand. And so if you're with us now and you're at the WWE Network, we're going to go to 1 hour, 18 minutes, 44 seconds, right at the start of the video package, and we're going to play that for you guys now just to hear it out into the entrances. I think it's very, very good because the video package helps set the context of the match, and it also helps set up what you're going to see at the end of the match as well. So, Chris, you good?
Good. Good.
All right, so we're going to start it up in 3, 2, 1. We're going to hit play.
These classic packages are great.
Yeah. Todd Pettengill, miss him.
Yeah, Todd Pettengill, oh man, I mean, it just brings me back.
This video package is so much foreshadowing of the double turn at the end of this match, because it paints Hart as the heel and Austin as the face in this video package alone before you even see the match.
Yeah, it does. Brett just beating up all the officials.
Wow, it's pretty incredible. That was a good... Oh, I love the classic WrestleMania theme.
Whoa, WrestleMania.
That was great. I think I started that for 10.
And it would become Linda McMahon's theme song.
Yeah, it would be. Shamrock looking jacked there with a super tight referee shirt on.
Of course, you got to show off those pecs.
Wow. And think about this. On the other station right now, the NWO is starting. And this is only WrestleMania 13.
Yeah. Well, NWO have been around for, what, six months?
Love this entrance here. I love when they used to show people coming out of the back. NXT does this now, and I love it.
Yeah.
Walking from the backstage area into the entrance, into Gorilla. The glass shattering right here. Fantastic. That was the first time we ever saw something like that. That was really great. Still very much the heel. Pulling away from the crowd, looking at them.
Yep, but they're still cheering.
Saw an Austin 420 sign there. How you doing? Back when they used to let you have signs in the arena, motherfuckers. Yes, Carlos. Red hoodie.
There he is. Yep. And this was in Chicago, so he was all over the place.
He would go to every single WrestleMania. Every single one. Doesn't matter where it was.
Jeez.
Imagine that. Actually, I want to look at the entrance here before I actually establish some a little more of this background. How this match didn't happen.
Yeah, I was just gonna dive into that also, because it did almost not happen.
So the crowd is red hot still for Austin. He is still very much the heel. And you hear the crowd booing Bret Hart here as soon as he walks out. He has the pyro going off and everything, but you hear the boos already. Very audible. Look how basic that set is, too. It's just WrestleMania 13 with a little archway. That's it. Look at compared to the stages you see now for every WrestleMania, it's incredible. How far they've come in terms of production value is amazing. Always wanted a pair of Bret Hart sunglasses. I'm not going to lie.
I love the jacket. It's pretty cool.
A friend of mine actually got me a pair for my birthday. I have them in storage right now.
Like actual glasses, like signed by
him? Not signed. I think it's the actual memorabilia pair or whatever.
Nice.
Still have them. I just have them in plastic. And it starts. We get right into it right away.
Fast start.
This is what I love about it too. And what I right here. I love that part of this match. They don't waste time. And I'm gonna hit mute here as we get into our match. But like so many times where you see a rivalry so heated like this, you see their guys like the heel will step out of the ring waiting for the face to get in and take his time and pose, or they'll just wait across the ring for their ring announcers. When it's so hot like this, no, fuck that. You get right into the battle. It's what I wanted Triple H and Roman Reigns and Triple H and Seth Rollins to do in their WrestleMania matches, because it got so heated towards the end.
Yeah.
Screw intro, screw pyro. I'm going to come down the ring and let's get right into it. Let's beat each other's ass right now. This is the quintessential that I'll use as an example for the rest of my life of what you should be doing.
Austin right into the post there.
He took it. He didn't even put his hands up, too. This is pretty remarkable that they're able to do something like this. Another guardrail. Oh, man, the poor security guy gets hit right in the foot. He gets hit right in the head by Bret Hart's foot. And Captain Lou and Tony Atlas are actually ringside right there. Look at that. And look at that kid. The kid on the left. The kid on the left just got in the camera's face. And Ken Shamrock just pushed him off. Like, get the hell back. And that kid just shit his pants. Look at Ken Shamrock. I got to say, Ken Shamrock might be the greatest grass referee ever. Look how he's just pushing back the crowd like that. That's incredible.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ken Shamrock's legit. Nobody's going to mess with him.
So talking, now we're going into the crowd here. Look at, I love this part here. He drinks the soda, hits him with the cup, starts stomping on him. And right here. This guy right here is trying to eat his nachos. He has the cheese in his hand as Bret Hart's getting stomped out, not even enjoying it. This Mexican guy just took off his shirt. Way to go. He got so hype.
He took the, or he was about to take the tray from the concession guy there.
Yeah. Did the concession guy say, no, I'll be fired? He's like, no, you can't take this. So my man with the slick back hair has a jacket with no shirt on. I thought he took his shirt off. I stand corrected. Way to go. Way to be so 90s. Look at this guy. Hey, give me a high five. You're beating each other's ass. Give me a high five. Look, he just patted Bret Hart on the back and then rubbed his head. There's an NWO shirt, though, in the back. Never noticed before. This is actually the first time I've seen that.
It's got to be like...
Normally, you have such a ton of security here, too.
Yeah, but it's got to be such a challenge for them, like, to work the match in that massive humanity there, and everybody's, like, just getting in the way and touching them.
Oh, that's on the stairs. He just took a back bump on the stairs, too. He reversed it. Yeah. You know, I do got to say, so security is kind of set back here. Shamrock is literally Shamrock might be the greatest guest referee in history. The way he's, like, the way he's doing crowd control as they're fighting. Look at him here.
Yeah.
Look. Telling people, get back. He's pushing people back. The actual security is just standing there. They look like a bunch of fucking slobs. Look. So these guys are actually getting a heart in Austin's face. And Shamrock gets right in the way, pushing people out of the way. Austin actually has his hand on Shamrock's shoulder. And Shamrock's leading them back into the ring. That was, I got to say, for Shamrock, that's his first time doing it. That was incredible. Because that could have ended dangerously right there. Because you've seen famously, like, CM Punk goes into the crowd and he actually turned around and hit a fan in the face because they would actually, you know, bothering him that much. You know, like,
yeah,
getting him in the way.
It's a risk for sure because fans, people in general, are just crazy.
It can get pretty hairy. You know, like, all due credit to Ken Shamrock right there, honestly. That was actually really good on his part. And Hart and Austin actually handled it very, very well. They're still able to do their moves, get off what they wanted to get off. And now they're back on ringside. Austin, two fingers, nice forearm off the apron. Nothing fancy. Just kicking his ass. It's because Stone Cold said so shirt there. And thinking about the context, we were saying, this match almost didn't happen, right? Because the original idea was a WrestleMania 12 rematch.
Right.
Between Austin and Hart.
HBK and Brett.
What did I just say?
Austin and Hart.
I gotta stop the Broken Skull IPAs. But yeah, you're absolutely right. HBK and Hart, right? Because HBK was the champion coming out of Royal Rumble. But then, going back to what you said, drops the belt.
Right? Yep.
So, you know, he lost his smile. He gives it up. They do the final four thing, and they set up this match. Right? But it was originally going to be Shawn, Brett at Mania, and Brett was going to beat Shawn for the belt, get the belt back, and get the win back. So now it would be 1-1. It'd be a Shawn Michaels knee injury saying that, you know, he may not wrestle again, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, a lot of people say, too, that he just dropped the belt because he didn't want to lose it to Hart. But imagine this, though. If they do HBK Hart at 13 instead, maybe Hart doesn't go heel. Maybe Austin never goes face. Maybe we never have the amount of popularity that Austin has because of this match.
There's a lot of what ifs there.
Yeah. The knee injury, or fake knee injury, however you want to see it, actually played a big role. And there's Hart now working on the knee, right? Because it is a submission match, right? And he's specifically working on the knee that has the brace, which is smart.
I love that move he does where he, like, rolls over with the leg.
Yeah. Man, no one does that shit anymore.
And Brett was just so great. He's definitely my top five of all time, Bret Hart.
Yeah. Steve Austin says about the match, I hear Vince say, yeah, in a submission match, it'll be Bret the Hitman Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. And that was news to me because I was watching the broadcast and didn't know a damn thing about the match. So they literally pieced it together at the last minute because they had that, you know, they're a storyline already together. It was there. Right out, kick it out the leg from underneath him. Still working on the knee, right? Because his finisher is the sharpshooter. It is a submission match. So now we're going to work a body part here, which is good, right?
Missed that
Brett,
one.
Brett holding his ass. Oh, stunner!
Yep, there it is.
Was this before he was doing the kick before the stunner? He was just yeah. Kind of just holding their head just and grabbing it.
Yeah.
And this would be at the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, Illinois. Chicago, rabid fan base there. Austin would say it's the best arena he's ever worked at.
Chicago is definitely a wrestling town, and they've had a lot of great events there.
Yeah. And here's another famous move that he would do, the post, the figure four on the post.
Yeah, and I think he like invented this, I think.
I want to say yes. I've never seen anybody do it before or after. A lot of people would actually say, too, that this was the real reason why he got the concussion in the Goldberg match. It wasn't the kicks to the head. It was the fact that when he get the figure four in the post, he actually smacked his head off the ring post. And that would give him the original concussion.
Yeah, it was a mix of both that and Goldberg kicking him in his face.
I'm just going to blame Goldberg because, yeah, you know.
Brett doing a lot of, you know, I know that officially it wouldn't be until the end that we get the double switch, but it's like you said before, a lot of foreshadowing and Brett doing a lot of heel things throughout this match.
Right. He grabs the bell. He grabs the chair. The video package alone set it up. They painted Hart as the heel in this match before the match even started.
Yeah. Like using the chair on his leg. Like this is all heel stuff right here.
You know, and then the bell he leaves at ringside, he's trying to jam him in there, but here comes Austin. Austin actually did that to Brian Pillman at one time, jammed his leg into there because he had the ankle surgery. So now it's just kind of like turning the tables on him. There's Hart. Look, he hits him with the chair, and then Austin is limping around the ring, selling the injury right now.
Another NWO shirt in the crowd there. Big chest shot.
WCW is nowhere to go but up. Also, just realized Ken Shamrock has some tight bicycle shorts on too. Everything tight on Ken Shamrock. Like I don't get it.
I mean, when you're ripped like that, I guess you can pull that stuff off.
I might just walk around naked if I was ripped like that. Nice vertical suplex play.
Oh, Gordon Solie action.
How you doing? That was a hell of a chair shot to the back right there. Oof, doing a nice little double feature as they used to do. Another double fingers, boom, elbow drop from the second rope.
Yep.
And the crowd at this point is firmly, if they weren't behind Austin yet, they're getting there, right? I mean, they're cheering him for everything he's doing. Everything that Brett's doing is getting audible boos.
Now, this match is, that little girl doesn't want to watch. But I mean, this match is very well documented. I mean, here it is in our bracket, making it to the final four. It's got all the critical acclaim and the praise. But WrestleMania 13 overall is considered like one of the worst WrestleManias.
This is the best match in a shit pay per view. I mean, let's be honest about it. You know, give me another match that stands out as a good match in this entire pay-per-view. I really don't think it is. I don't think it's that great. You have the Headbangers beating Doug Furness and Phil LaFon, the Godwins and the New Blackjacks. Rocky Maivia defeating the Sultan. Hunter Hearst Helmsley defeating Goldust, but that would give you Chyna and her appearance, taking out Marlena. Owen Hart and the Bulldog would beat Vader and Mankind. And then you have that Chicago street fight, Ahmed Johnson, LOD against the Nation of Domination, and then Undertaker and Psycho Sid, which is might be in the running of one of the worst main events in WrestleMania history. Not Undertaker's fault, though, I'll tell you that much. Boston Crab here on Austin. So even though it's, you know, submission match, he's not known for submissions, he does apply one. Shout out to Rick Martel, Boston Crab. How you doing? Or the Quebec Crab, as he likes to say.
Rick Martel is becoming the face of our show here.
It's so he is, he might be our unofficial mascot. The day he gets inducted to the Hall of Fame, I'll be there. That's it, just for him. If anybody knows how to get in touch with Rick Demona Martel at Wrestling Guys PC, I'd love to have him on the show.
It's Stone Cold trying to put on the sharpshooter.
Thumb to the eye. Listen, when all else fails, a nice thumb to the eye is where you got to go here. Again, another heel tactic there, though.
Yep. Now, it always bothered me watching when you would watch guys use other people's finishers or other people's submission holds, like right there. Stone Cold trying to put on the sharpshooter. Clearly doing it wrong, like going the wrong way with the leg, you know.
Right.
Is that because he really doesn't know how to do it, or is it just like a, you know, a respect thing to, you know, not like it's Brett's move, so nobody should be able to do it better than Brett.
You know what I'm trying to say? Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. It's the I'm trying to do it to embarrass you, but I really don't know how to do it. You know what I mean? But at the same time, maybe he didn't know how to do it. Right. But I think the story element there is, you know, that's your move. I'm trying to embarrass you, but I really don't know how to do it. So as I'm trying to do it, I'm going to get the thumb to the eye, you know.
Right.
But see, and this is, ooh, there it is. This, I think, is this where he gets busted open here?
It might be. But the thing about the about Austin bleeding here is, you know, we talked about the Shawn Michaels razor ladder match going long and getting a little bit of heat for it. And yeah, Austin is busted.
Yep, there it is.
But Austin, that wasn't a hard way. They actually bladed. And it was Bret Hart's idea to blade, and they got in trouble because they weren't supposed to do that. I think there was like a no blood policy, and Bret Hart, you know, told Steve, hey, let's just blade anyway. You know, don't worry about it. Let me take the heat. And when they asked Bret afterwards, he lied and was like, oh no, that was a hard way.
Yeah, and he said, "Don't worry." But he also said, "Don't worry, I'll take the heat for you." Because at this time, Bret Hart is a significantly bigger star in the company than Austin is, right. So he doesn't want to get Austin in trouble. But they did; they had a strict no blood policy at this point, and they both would get a lot of heat for this. But then, you know, is there a better shot at the end of this match than what we're going to see in a few minutes? You know,
no, there isn't. It would be one of the benchmarks, one of the staples of Austin's character and career.
Right. And this is kudos to Bret Hart for foreseeing it. Like, listen, if we're going to have a submission match, but we're going to go all over the arena and kick each other's ass. Look at the blood pouring from his head. Jesus. That's a hell of a good job. It really is. You know, if we're going to have this match, we need the blood. The blood has to happen here.
And it also makes sense as to why Stone Cold just passes out.
Exactly. Blood loss. It's not. It's the combination of the sharpshooter plus the loss of blood. He never taps out. He never says, I quit. They weren't tapping out at this point, but never says, I submit, I quit, or anything like that. And it just makes him that much better in the fans' eyes. Like, holy shit, he didn't even say anything. He went until he passed out, you know?
Yeah.
Famous backbreaker by Bret Hart here.
I love that backbreaker. Yeah. Excellence of execution right there.
All right. The man is my all-time favorite wrestler for a reason. Find me a bad match that Bret Hart had in WWE. I dare you. At Wrestling Guys PC.
You can't because it doesn't exist. I mean.
Right. His WCW work? Yeah, okay, fine. But WWE, I'm talking about strictly, you won't.
You know, his WCW run, there's a lot, I think, to unpack with that. You know, it's more than just I don't think it had anything to do with Bret just not being good or being past his prime. There was so much more going on with that whole thing.
Lack of motivation, didn't want to be there. They knew that he wouldn't do anything with him. Almost Bret Hart seems like he doesn't know what to do with the sharpshooter here. Look, he almost did it wrong himself.
Yeah. Trying to set up so Austin can get his way out of it.
Yeah.
Austin taking a lot of punishment in this match. Not really a lot of offense.
But just giving, man. Giving his body to Brett, trusting him. They did a really good, Brett and Austin did a really good breakdown in this match on the old Edge and Christian podcast, if you guys are ever interested in listening to that. They both went back and forth talking about the match. Oh, low blow there by Austin. Nice move because he's bleeding profusely. He's just getting punched in the wound. When in doubt, kick you in the balls.
Yep. It always works.
But still good there, man. Look at Austin selling. He has the leg injury. Now he has the cut. Look at him reaching for the rope. Can't grab it. Like that's the little things there, man. The little selling thing. Just like, you know, Michaels with the leg, then by the arm. Reaching, trying to get himself up. Now he has a little second wind here, third wind. Going at Hart. Hart takes that. He might be 1A to Sean's one that takes the corner turnbuckle like that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He took it to the chest, and Michaels always did going up, upside down and rolling back in. Fantastic. Here's the mud hole stomp here. Famous. Double fingers. Boom. Famous in Austin's career. Kudos to Ken Shamrock, man. I didn't realize how important he was to this match until we just started watching it now.
Well, Ken Shamrock, I think, was training to be a pro wrestler before he got into mixed martial arts.
He was trained. Yeah, he trained a long time ago before that. So he was training as a pro wrestler in addition to his MMA training.
Right.
So he knew the ins and outs well before, you know, this. Maybe didn't have the ring experience, but he was there. I always liked Ken Shamrock in the WWE. And I know I would listen to Pritchard say that, and Jim Ross famously, that, you know, people would say, like, how come Shamrock never got a bigger push in WWE? Because he was such a good wrestler. He had a lot of good matches. And it was just like he became unreliable, you know, right, partying and stuff like that. And just, you know, not showing up on dates, showing up late and stuff. So they didn't want to make him like a world champion. That's somebody they couldn't rely on, you know. Look at him grabbing the – first of all, there's like miles of cable that are just exposed in the ring. Like nobody lays any tape down or covers. Like at least now – you want to talk about production values? Look at that shit. Just like a fucking extension cord just out in the ring like that. If I'm a fan, you just unplug. You could probably kill the whole set here. Wow, double time. Three, triple. Hanging him. Austin seemed like he was telling him something there, right?
Yeah, and here's the ring.
There's the bell. The bell that he originally picked up towards the beginning of the match, he dropped it in that spot, never left. Okay, that's storytelling there, right? Setup, perfect setup. He left it there. It never moved. As he's wrapping it around him, he hits him with the bell. Here's the sharpshooter. I think this is the end sequence here. I'm going to unmute here. Here it is. Who would blame Stone Cold if he gave up here? Look at McMahon standing up. Look at that picture. He gets up, blood pouring from his head. He says no, keeps saying no. Look at him, starting to slowly pass out. Look at him, mouth open. Jim Ross is killing it on the commentary here.
There was no one better than Jim Ross.
Look at him right here. There it is. Right there. The blood in his teeth. There it is. Jerry Lawler, it's impossible. Look, he almost breaks the sharpshooter. He breaks it, right? But Brett, because he has the more energy here, no blood loss. He's still
hanging on.
He's still hanging on. He picks himself back up. Look at that. The picture of him pushing up with the blood in the teeth and everything. Look, here it is again.
Wearing the crimson mask.
Do you give up? Kim Shamrock says, if you do not answer me, I will stop the fight. That's incredible. That's incredible. Shamrock did a great job. So there's a mix here. I love that. JR. Austin never gave up. Austin never gave up, but he passed out.
Yep.
The fucking commentary on this sold the hell out of this match as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ken Shamrock did an incredible job here, too. He's like, Steve, do you give up? Do you give up? If you don't answer me, I'm going to stop the match. He didn't answer him. He stops the match.
Doesn't Shamrock get physical with Brett here at some point, too?
Yeah, because this is the here's our double turn here. So there's people applauding. People are happy right now. And there is a smattering of boos here as well. And then you're going to see the double turn happen right here.
How do you maneuver it in those shorts?
I don't get it. I don't know how he moves his legs. Bret Hart normally does the Jimmy Snuka, I love you,
to the crowd, right? When he's
not doing it, man. He's just in the corner, like, showing off. Look at the blood stain in the ring. Austin just turned over. Oh, there he goes. Bret attacking the leg.
Come on, Bret.
Enough's enough. Bret Hart fan, but that's enough. Gonna do the sharpshooter again. Here's Ken Shamrock.
Waist lock and takes him down. Now, this will typically lead to a Bret and Shamrock match, but it never did.
No. I mean, he would be on that team in Canadian Stampede, though, right? Wouldn't he?
Yeah, he was. And now Bret leaving.
And now here's the boos coming in. Look at that. It went from cheering, smattering of boos, whole arena is booing Bret Hart now. Perfect execution.
He didn't even really do much.
Look, flipping off the crowd. He just said, fuck you to a fan.
I think that guy might have said something to him, though.
This is a great moment here, too. Bret Hart, Austin denies the help from everybody. I think he gives the referee a stunner. Yeah, there it is. Kick. look at the crowd. Crowd cheering their eyes. Still selling the knee, by the way. Still selling the knee.
And Austin, to the best of my knowledge, never got that win over Bret.
No. But it made his career, though, both matches.
Yep. And that would be a third, a Revenge of the Taker in your house.
That might be one we have to cover, because I do not remember that match at all.
I think it ended in a DQ.
It did end in DQ, yeah. You're right. But look at the crowd now. All booing Bret Hart. Everybody's chanting Austin now. Incredible. Commentary still putting over Austin.
Yep.
And what about the JR right there? What about the transformation in Bret Hart?
Yeah, a lot of emphasis on the switch on the the double turn there. So.
From the video package to the match to the commentary. Wow. And Jerry Lawler with his feud with Bret Hart.
Austin.
Wow. Ty Pentgill standing by with Farouk, looking real militant. But that's woof. So we just finished Austin Hart submission match from 13. Chris, do you need a minute to process both matches that we just saw here? This is, I knew this was going to be difficult. I'm not going to lie. I knew it was going to be difficult. Not this difficult. Because we just saw two incredible matches here.
I mean, two of the best matches ever in WWE history, maybe even wrestling history. Two matches that have been benchmarks, you know, in you know, all the careers of all four of those who, you know, the matches that we just watched, you know, the rise of the ladder match, the rise of Steve Austin, the famous double turn, just so much going on there, and just those two matches and what they would mean for the future. For my pick, I can make my pick now. I mean, I have said in previous episodes, for those who have been following our bracket here, that, you know, Razor and Shawn ladder match WrestleMania 10 is one of my favorites of all time. It is my favorite ladder match of all time. I just, that match means a lot to me personally. I did say that I'm not just going to pick it just because of that reason. That I wanted to, you know, be fair and analyze them and not be biased. I think this is where I go the other way. And I think here Austin and Brett wins out. It's two different matches. So it's hard for me to say like, oh, it's better, but there's maybe a little bit more meaning to what was going on with Austin and Brett, you know, story, what it led to. You know, it's definitely an entertaining match, a lot of factors involved. So I'm going Austin Brett here to the finals.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I was thinking about this too, because I don't want to be like, have too much of a biased opinion when talking about this stuff. Right. And Austin Hart, for all intents and purposes, and I think I've said this before on your Fans Perspective podcast at FVP Show on Twitter. Austin Hart is probably my favorite WrestleMania match of all time, hands down. And watching it again here and really going with you through the smaller things. Like, there's all these big moments, right? You know, pushing up out of the thing and the blood and, you know, Shamrock with a belly-to-belly and fighting in the crowd. But it was the little things this time around. And don't get me wrong, HBK Razor had those little things too. But Austin and Hart was a match that almost didn't happen to a match that made Austin's career. Like, he came in as the heel, was still the heel. Right, but between the video package, the psychology in the ring, the action in the ring, the commentary too, they put this match over incredibly well. And if this match never happened, we may not get the popularity of Austin as big. It would have happened, but maybe not as big as it would have, because they needed that double switch. I mean, famously, they turned that picture of him pushing up with the blood coming down his face into a T-shirt. I mean, yeah. It's just an iconic image. When you think about WrestleMania, you think about this match. Same thing with HBK Razor, but it's just those little things that I think add up that make it slightly, slightly better than HBK Razor. And when I mean slightly, I'm talking razor to turn, you know, no pun intended there, razor thin margin. But for me, yeah, it's Austin Hart 13. It just had everything, man. It had everything. It had the psychology. It had the storytelling. It had the action. And the thing that gets me for this one, and I know we said HBK Razor with only one ladder, this match was a fucking submission match. And it just had, it was just a street fight. And they know what's funny after that? A street fight followed this match. A Chicago street fight. And if you want to see a difference between the action between the submission match, quote unquote, with Hart and Austin, and the Chicago street fight. I mean, they try to pull out of the stops too. They destroy tables. They do this. It's nothing compared to what you saw in Austin and Hart. And I think we have our first finalist today, man. Steve Austin, Bret Hart, WrestleMania 13 submission match, has made it as one of the potential final two, because we still have another two matches to go, but that'll be next week. You guys have to wait for that. That'll be part two. But I'm happy with this pick. I think this was good. This was difficult, but it was good. I think it was the right choice.
Definitely fun to revisit. I haven't seen the Austin Brett match in a while, so it's definitely fun to revisit them. And yeah, next week is going to be another hard choice. Two Undertaker matches going up against each other. Another Shawn Michaels match. It's going to be a hard pick next week, but another fun watch along.
So just to give you context here, next week we have Undertaker HBK WrestleMania 25. Again, another match that is considered in terms of the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. It's there, if not the match. And then you have another match in Taker and Triple H from WrestleMania 28, the end of an era, Hell in a Cell. That is considered a great match in its own right. And we're going to watch both. We're going to do what we did here, really break down the match by its smallest parts, because both matches are great. But what's going to stand out one from the other in terms of moving on to the finals here? And who's going to be the winner? That is the better question. Man, we got a lot in store. At Wrestling Guys PC, as usual, did you enjoy the bracket? Do you like our pick for part one of the final four here? Do you disagree? Is there a match we're leaving out here that maybe we've overlooked? We want to hear all that, as usual. Dude, I got to say, this was tough. Next week's going to be tougher. We're almost there. We're almost done.
And next week, we could potentially be recording at the same time. During night one of NXT Stand and Deliver or night two? I mean, depending on what day we actually record, but we'll be recording and probably watch a lot to watch along to. But
it's a lot of things. A lot of things happening. Yep. Yeah, we do. You have two nights NXT, so it'll probably be around that time. We have a Hall of Fame. We have two go-home shows. Then we have two nights of WrestleMania. Then you have Raw after WrestleMania, SmackDown after WrestleMania. What are we going to do? What are we going to see? Is there going to be any debuts? I mean, it's amazing to me the amount of stuff we're going to see next week. And we're only getting started, right? I mean, this is incredible. Before we sign off here, they announced that there might not be no opening match for in terms of pre-show for Night 1 of Mania, because they want that first match amongst the crowd to be significant. So my question to you is, who main events? Bianca Belair, Sasha Banks, Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley, night one?
I say night one. I say Drew and Bobby Lashley main event. I wouldn't be surprised if Sasha and Bianca did. But I do understand taking the pre-show out, because this is the first event where fans will be in participation. So yeah, kick it off. You know, don't have a pre-show where the fans could, I don't want to say burn out, but you know, start it off with a bang, start it off fresh. You know, get those first crowd reactions to be legit and on, you know, the opening of the show. So, and for the first time in a year, we get to see a match with natural crowd reaction, which I think we've all learned over the last year how important that is. So yeah, looking forward to it. But I think Drew and Bobby probably main event. But then again, maybe not. You know, maybe they switch it up and have Sasha Bianca main event night one, because night two, I think it's without question that the main event is the triple threat for the Universal title.
I want to see the ladies going to main event night one. I think they're going to open up with something huge, and you want the world title match right off the bat. You know, huge lightning for Lashley and Drew McIntyre. You know, throws a sword in the ground. They got flames shooting up and shit. Right. This is going to be big. This is going to be big. And I think the ladies might close it out. But it's going to be good to have fans back in the WWE setting. And the Thunderdome is moving into another thing for the foreseeable future. But just to have more people in the ring hearing genuine reactions. You know, AEW has been doing it for a few months now. And it seems to be working, which is nice. So I want to see that here on the biggest stage with the hopefully some solid matches that we're going to see for the night. Listen, I know these people aren't going to, you know, the characters and the people are not going to disappoint. You know, all storyline problems aside, they're still going to do what they got to do. So with that being said, I think we're going to have a good time. I think we're going to have a hell of a week. You're going to have a recording. You're going to have a bunch of shows. You're going to have tons of shit coming at you this week. It's going to be a lot. But what you should do is listen to us first. If you listen to us first, you download us anywhere you get your podcast, okay? Listen, see what the finals are, see who the winners is, then watch it because, you know, DVR is a great thing. Watch all that first. Hit us up at Wrestling Guys PC. You're going to hit Chris up here at FPP Show, Fans Perspective Podcast. What do you got going on this week?
Well, we're just a little behind in our recording schedule, but we are going to be dropping our episode dedicated to movie director's cuts. That will be coming.
Something good to look at. You're going to look at the director's cuts of various other films. If you're into that pop culture, movies, hook that up at FPP Show as usual. We may be dropping, as I said last week, the Snyder cut of this bracket. You never know. All matches that we missed or didn't miss. So let's wrap it up here. Let's put a bow on it as usual. Thank you for downloading, subscribing. You want to leave that 5-star review. You want to say, hey, I love this show. You want to leave us your comments, your questions, your thoughts on this bracket at Wrestling Guys PC. Direct all your attention about director's cuts to at FPP Show. You know how they do over there. You know how we do over here. Grab a drink. Spread the word. What do you think of the Mania match bracket? What do you think ends off night one? How do you think this night's going to play out? Do you hate the creative in WWE? All of this and more. And as usual, this has been the Wrestling Guys Podcast. Chris Never Miss, myself, Fizz the Revolution. And as usual, came to talk about wrestling, drinks, and beers. I'm just all out of beers. I have no glass, so I'm gonna crush the can like so. I don't know if you heard that shit. But as usual, have fun, stay safe, wear a damn mask, wash your damn hands, take care of yourselves.